This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, January 8th, 2025. Nice to have you along. Coming up this hour, we'll be talking to Bryn Horton from the Wisconsin Public Education Network as part of our homeroom segment. She also serves on the Sun Prairie School Board, if I'm not mistaken. But with the Public Education Network, she helps track things that are moving through the Wisconsin legislature that could impact education. And so we'll talk more about what the legislature could be considering education-related this year, beyond, of course, the state budget and other obvious debates that go on around that. We'll talk to Up North News reporter Selena Heller in just a bit. Mumps, it's on the rise again in Wisconsin and across the country. It is preventable. There is a vaccine. We will talk more about that coming up in just a bit. But first, meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us as well. So is Greg Bach in Racine. Can't miss Greg there. Hi, Greg. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It is cloudy and 9 degrees. I had to get the garbage and recycling out as my township, Germania, moved garbage day from Thursday to Wednesday. I hate when that happens. yesterday got salt from Wittenberg, getting ready when we get the next snow and ice storm that will come eventually. Yeah, but not like down south, as Brittany's probably going to tell us. And she says, or he says, when you mentioned Tupelo, Mississippi, as we talked about Elvis's birthday in our last segment, being a highway lover, Highway 45 that goes through Tupelo is the same highway that starts in Michigan, runs to Mobile, Alabama, and runs just 5 miles from my house in Tigerton. So Tigerton connects Tupelo, Mississippi with Highway 45. So there you go, Rob. Just get on the road and move. Let's see. Tony writes on YouTube, my daughter asked me when it would be warm out again, Brittany. Are you working on that?
No, I'm not. No way.
That is not March, April. In the wheelhouse of our ice queen over here.
DJ Flitmix just destroying children's dreams. Good job.
Well, the kids here. Emery's class wants snow, so...
See, kids don't know what they want.
Kids wanted snow days.
They can't vote. They don't know what they want. They just
want to play in the snow.
Rob writes in on YouTube, I want snow. Well, yeah, make a cash register sound right behind that.
Exactly.
Of course you do. Why wouldn't you? But this sounds rather concerning what's about to hit the South.
Yes.
They're going to get a winter storm. How far south are we talking here?
We're talking hard hit into Dallas area, Arkansas. Ooh. Yes,
they're
under winter storm
ready.
Warnings.
No,
they're not.
No.
At crazy ice accumulations all the way onto the western side of the state and then eastern side towards Dallas. That's where they're looking at over a half a foot of snowfall, potentially 10 inches. That's massive.
Let me tell this story again. I haven't told it for a while here, but I have a daughter that lives in Idaho, but did move to Texas for about a year and a half, a couple of years back. Packed the moving van, headed down there for an opportunity. And when they got there, she realized that one of the boxes she meant to put in a storage locker, back in Idaho, was on the truck. And she's in Texas going, what am I going to do with all these hats and gloves from the kids? Well, the next day is when that infamous cold snap hit, what about, 3 years ago, whatever it was, and they were heroes. Her then 5-year-old comes up and says, my friends are cold. Can they have hats and gloves? And so all the hats and gloves got distributed to these Texas kids who were not ready, and they're about to get walloped again. I do feel bad when that happens. It's not, you don't expect that there.
No, you don't. I don't think they have the equipment to clear that either. So they're going to need some help. Hopefully everybody just stays home and stays inside and nothing too crazy happens.
Yeah, exactly. So what do we have around here? It's still quiet and cold?
Yeah, basically. High temperatures in the Great North will be about in the upper teens today. For the rest of the state, low 20s. Winds are calm. We do have some flurries that could make its way through central Wisconsin, but otherwise, lake effect snow very, very close to Lake Superior. Probably an inch or two. Nothing too crazy going on here. But as we go through tomorrow, that system down south starts to join with a system here. So it's kind of pushing a big front through the area. Now, we're not going to be hit, obviously, the hardest. That stays far, far south of us. But we are looking at a light accumulation potentially tomorrow and into Friday. That looks maybe like 1 to 2 inches up north to about a half an inch for down south. So nothing major, but we are looking at some snow on the way through tomorrow and Friday. And then, of course, some warmer temperatures into the weekend and maybe more snow on Sunday.
Okay. See, now that we're used to. We can be ready for that.
Yes.
Here's a funny. So I have some friends in who moved from Wisconsin to Florida, and she said the other day that they got some sort of advisory because it was going to be cold. So dress the kids warm. It was going to be like 40 degrees.
Adorable.
And I said, you know, last week I brought Emery to school, and I said, you know, you're probably going to go into school right away because with the wind chill, it was 5 below. And so I'm like, okay, so we're going to go in. You're going to go in right away. No, we got there. The kids were outside. And I said,
of course they were.
What's the threshold? And 10 below with the wind chill. So they still had to play outside.
Yes, absolutely. They can play in the ice bowl. Put them up on the frozen tundra of Lambeau. They can do it. We are a hearty folk up here.
Yes, it's something to be proud of.
Yeah, well, more or we're just crazy that way. Okay. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Reminder, as always, you can join us here on the show, 855-75-CIVIC by phone or by text, or you can use the Civic Media app to call or text us. And if you're watching us on the Up North News YouTube page, the Up North News Facebook page, or the Civic Media Facebook page, put a little something in the comment section there as well. So the latest story that Selena Heller is working on deals with the fact that, you know, mumps, measles, these kinds of things are on the rise again, things that are preventable. I'm looking at the website for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and it says Wisconsin is now up to 5 reported mumps cases, which is nothing like Illinois with 23 or Michigan with 15. But still, Selena, you know, this is something that can be serious, you know, especially for the young and the old, and we're already seeing it in central Wisconsin.
Yeah, so Clark County had a confirmed case just the other day. So that's what they've been talking about and getting the word out. And, you know, so here's some numbers. I got to throw these at you guys. So the United States started the vaccine program in 1967. So around that time, would you have any idea, guess how many cases there were across the United States?
Across the U.S.? No.
Yes.
What would it have?
152,209. So then jump to, say, 2003, because of the vaccine program and everything else, that number is down to 231.
That's a vaccine. That's what a vaccine can do. And again, for people who go, well, it's not zero. No, it's not supposed to. But that's pretty effective. Unfortunately, the COVID pandemic and the intentional misinformation around that vaccine has, I'm sure, played a role in the rise in mumps cases.
Mm-hmm. So, the numbers say they have increased beginning in 2006 across the country. So the Clark County case, there's the one confirmed case. This is mumps is contagious disease. It's easily spread from person to person. So don't share utensils, drinks, chapsticks, anything like that. Cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. Always remember those things. Wash your hands. Brittany Mays is the health director in Clark County, and I talked with her last night, and she talks about symptoms.
So mumps is very easily spread, or obviously, of course, meaning it's contagious from person to person. And how that is spread is through direct contact of droplets in the air. So an infected person can spread those droplets when they talk, cough, sneeze, or share cups or dishes with other people. And sometimes usually the symptoms typically start with a fever, and then it can also lead to headaches, muscle aches, tiredness, and loss of appetite. And then after a few days, the glands in and around your mouth may start to swell. And this swelling can be very painful, and it can also cause puffy cheeks and a puffy neck. Some individuals also have trouble swallowing when this occurs.
And so let's turn from symptoms to prevention. Obviously, you've got the vaccine and some of the tips that you just talked about.
Yep. So she talks about, you know, when people should get a vaccination. And so here's Brittany Mays talking about prevention.
The best way to prevent the mumps is to receive the MMR vaccine, also known as the measles, mumps, and rubella. And it's best to get vaccinated before an exposure happens. So before an outbreak occurs, we encourage individuals to get vaccinated for all the vaccines in which they are able to receive. The MMR vaccine is not used as a prevention tool after an exposure has already taken place, and it's not effective at helping those who have already been infected with mumps. However, again, the vaccination can prevent disease for potential future exposures and herd immunity for future preventing future community outbreaks. So it's really critical. We strongly encourage vaccination. A little bit on the vaccination, children should routinely get two doses of the MMR vaccine, with the first dose at age 12 through 15 months, and then that second dose at ages 4 through 6. Adults who have not received the MMR vaccine should receive one dose if they do not have any evidence of immunity to measles, mumps, or rubella.
I mean, that's all good advice, Selena, but the numbers are not looking good. I mean, the rate of vaccination in Wisconsin for children entering kindergarten, I mean, the CDC target is 95%. In Wisconsin, it's more like in the mid-80s in terms of vaccination. That is extremely troubling.
Well, my goodness. Yeah, I didn't know that number. So, yes.
I was just looking at something that and Eric Gunn from the Wisconsin Examiner wrote about this not too long ago. Here's the one that really sticks out, though. The vaccination rate for kids heading into kindergarten for polio is 86%. I'm just letting it sit out there, folks. 86%. There are 14% of people with kids going into kindergarten that you need to go find them and shake them by the shoulders to try to prevent whatever else could conceivably come down the line. Selena Heller keeping us updated on the vaccinations there. And prior to that, karaoke coming soon to performances at the Heller household. Thanks for that wonderful Christmas present. Selena, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's on the ballot for February and April. Yes, there will be an important primary election for one of the statewide races that will be decided on April 1st. We'll talk about the race for DPI State Superintendent and State Supreme Court on the way. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
David Bowie was born 78 years ago today, part of today's history lesson that you get every weekday morning at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Nice to have you here at just about 7:22 now. Civic Media has a way for you to stay up to date with news in your community every weekday, even when you can't be by your radio, with Civic Media's Local News Roundup podcasts. You can listen at the Civic Media website or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, at Up North News, we have a daily newsletter as well. Sign up for that at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the banner on top of our homepage. Stories there today related to some great train trips that you can take in Wisconsin. Some of them are along a standard Amtrak line. Some are specialty trains that you could take for like little dinner jaunts, essentially. So learn more about that by signing up for our newsletter. Well, we are going to have a couple of big elections in Wisconsin on April 1st. but in at least one of them, there will also be a primary in February. The two big elections that are coming up, one is for an open seat on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. There is a liberal Justice Ann Walsh Bradley who is retiring. So that leads to an open seat. And it's fair to say that Republicans and conservatives are going to be coming hard for that seat, because if they win it, they will retake ideological control of the state Supreme Court. Liberals took a 5-4 control of the court with the election of Janet Protasiewicz a couple of years back. It broke a 15-year stranglehold of conservative control over the court. But again, that progressive control could be very short-lived if on April 1st, Scott Walker's former Attorney General Brad Schimmel were to win the election. He is the conservative candidate running for this open seat on the state Supreme Court. So the reason this is so important for conservatives as well is that the next couple of seats that come up, that come due, because they're on staggered terms, the next couple of seats that come up will be belonging to conservative justices who will be defending their seats. So this is the only opportunity that conservatives might have for the next few years to take control of the court. So you have Brad Schimmel, who is going to be running, as is Dane County Judge Susan Crawford. We've talked to her previously at the start of her campaign for state Supreme Court, and she will join us again next week to talk about her campaign. But as far as former Attorney General Brad Schimmel goes, he had some interesting things to say recently to a far-right radio host in Wisconsin about the January 6th defendants, claiming that they never got, quote, a fair shot in court. So if you've got somebody like Brad Schimmel who's defending the insurrectionist mob and attacking courts, running as a state Supreme Court justice, I want you to keep this part in mind. The Wisconsin Supreme Court was still under conservative control right after the 2020 election. And there were five conservative justices at the time, and four of them indicated that they were willing to go along with Donald Trump's claim that there was some kind of fraud, which didn't exist, and might have been prepared to delay or even overturn the will of the voters of Wisconsin. If it hadn't been for one conservative justice, Brian Hagedorn, saying there is no evidence of this fraud, get out of here, who knows what could have happened in this state? And don't think it can't happen, because in North Carolina, it may be about to happen. There's a contentious state Supreme Court election going on there. The Republican challenger to the Democratic incumbent is trying to get 60,000 votes thrown out on a technicality. And a Trump-appointed judge this week indicated their willingness to kick this back to the conservative-led North Carolina Supreme Court. And the North Carolina Supreme Court could overturn the results of an election to help a fellow conservative join the court. So we're going to talk about that this later this week as well with my Courier Newsroom colleague, Billy Ball, from the Cardinal and Pine. And we're going to talk to Ruth Conniff of the Wisconsin Examiner tomorrow morning about the recent comments by Brad Schimmel about the insurrectionists and saying that they couldn't get a fair shake in court. And again, we'll talk to Susan Crawford, who is the progressive candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court, coming up. So there does not look like there will be a primary in that particular contest, because it is only the two candidates, Susan Crawford and Brad Schimmel, and they will face off on April 1st for that state Supreme Court seat. The other big race is for state superintendent of public instruction, leading the DPI, the Department of Public Instruction. The incumbent there, Jill Underle, is running for a second term. But there are also two challengers that have announced. And neither one of them lists themselves as conservative. Jeff Wright, for example, is a fellow superintendent in Wisconsin who, you know, has described himself as progressive or Democratic in the past. And then there is another candidate from Wauwatosa, Brittany Kinzer, who has described herself somewhat as a blue dog Democrat, which, depending on, you know, your feeling about the term, either indicates a somewhat more conservative Democrat or a practically Republican running as a Democrat. And so there isn't a doubt there that in that particular race, Brittany Kinzer will be asked to be more specific about what she would like to do as state superintendent of public instruction if she were going to win. Similarly, Jeff Wright, who is the superintendent of the Sauk Prairie School District, will be talking more about his candidacy for DPI and what each of them thinks makes them the better candidate than the incumbent, Jill Anderle, who's running for that second term. Now, we'll get more into each of their campaigns as time goes on here, but it's worth noting that because there are three candidates, there will be a primary. That primary will be February 18th. And because it's a nonpartisan race, what it means is the three candidates will be whittled down to two. And it doesn't matter their ideology, party, anything like that. The top two candidates on February 18th will advance to the April 1st ballot. Quick note here, Tom and Jackson text in any updates on the important results from the Virginia legislature yesterday. Yes, the two Democrats defended their seats and will continue to control the Virginia legislature. More after this. You're up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Elvis Presley was born 90 years ago today. Welcome to our homeroom segment that we do every Wednesday morning, talking about the strengths and the threats to public education in Wisconsin. And happy to bring back to the program Bryn Horton, who is on the Sun Prairie School Board, but joins us in her capacity as a legislative tracker for the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Bryn, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Nice to have you back here. Keeping track of what happens in the legislature, it's not a sexy job. And I say that as somebody who's been a legislator. But it's also an extremely important function to figure out what our state lawmakers are doing that will either help or harm education. So when we left off, the state legislature had come back into session on Monday after exactly 300 days of a paid vacation funded by taxpayers that Republican leadership did. So needless to say, the inbox has only piled up in the interim. We know the big thing, Bryn, is a state budget bill, and we'll cover that in some detail throughout the next few months here. But before we get to the current legislature and the current budget, do you mind walking us through some of the pending legislation that didn't get taken up before their 300-day vacation last year? What are some of the things that could have helped or could have hurt and are back in the inbox for this session?
Sure. So it was a good trip down memory lane, actually, to remember everything, because it has been a while. And there were over 200 bills that went through for education. Well, didn't go through, but got introduced last session for education. So looking through a lot of that, and you can really see what side of the aisle they are coming from just by looking at the benefits and negatives of it. And I would say that a lot of there was a big slate of bills introduced by the Dems towards the middle of the session that were about teacher retention, making sure that we could, one of the suggestions was a minimum wage, standard minimum salary for public school teachers across the state, which I think would have been really great for teachers to be able to at least have a set minimum place where they're starting, no matter where you go. Then we have our I think every legislative session, a bill about when the start of the school year can happen, as that continues to be controlled by the legislature. And that didn't even get a hearing again this time. We had a great study group committee that was formed over the summer before the legislative session around consolidation of school districts. And they introduced a whole slate of bills that never got hearings around how we can make it easier for school districts to consolidate, which is kind of a scary prospect, but also knowing how many districts are in some dire straits with finances right now, it probably would have really helped some school districts feel a little bit more confident about what they would need to do if they had to dissolve or if they needed to consolidate with a neighboring school district. But then we also saw bills around requiring a civics class and required curriculum for that civics class that I believe received a hearing, but didn't get any farther than that. We had some bills around parental choice and parental, the voucher programs and the special needs programs on both sides. There was a bill trying to decouple those payments from the general aids that school districts come in. I know for sure that we will see that come up in the next legislative session. That seems to be a pretty hot topic, not just in Wisconsin, but in other states as well. Parental rights was another big topic that didn't get far this time around, but will also come up again. I think this would be the third legislative session that bills have come through for parental rights and outlining what rights parents have for their kids while they're in school. There was legislation around regulating school libraries and public libraries and what kids can and can't check out of those libraries and what libraries would need to notify parents about. And I'm sure that we will see that come up again. There were a couple bills around tax bill transparency. And I know there are some local jurisdictions that do this for their tax bills where they are very clear about money that's going to the school district and where that money is going and what of that money is going to charters and vouchers.
I was going to say, more importantly, how much of it is being skimmed off the top to go to voucher schools, and yet because of that lack of transparency on the tax bill, taxpayers think it's all going to the public school district when in fact it's not. So without looking to pass judgment on all these many bills, that's not my point, but my point is to say that we pay this legislature a full-time salary, around $57,000 a year. They get paid all year long, and yet they didn't hold a floor session from last March 12th until this past Monday. And just by that one answer alone, on education alone, it's clear there was much. It's not like they ran out of things to do and said, well, I guess we'll go home. They just made the decision not to do any more work and let these bills pile up. So they'll be back in some way, shape, or form. So let me ask about one specifically, and that deals with new literacy requirements that, again, the Republican-controlled legislature insisted on. And there was supposed to be $50 million that went to fund them, but in a spat or a temper tantrum from the Joint Finance Committee of the legislature, they've withheld that money. Where are we on that? Are school districts having to fully fund these new literacy programs, or are the programs not getting adopted or changed because there isn't the state funding? What do you know about that at this point?
Yeah, so the law is still in effect, and so districts are still having to go through and meet the requirements of that. It's a roll in, so this year is kind of the transition year, I would say, where we're having, and I say this having the knowledge of it from a school board member as well, of having to shift curriculum if needed away from the three queuing. The big thing right now is the personalized reading plans that students need to have. The winter testing window is when the new reading screener has to be used as required by law. There's a bunch of requirements that go into effect July 2025 that everybody's working towards right now, and doing it all without any of the support that was what was said was going to occur during the Act 20 bill, which was that DPI was going to be able to hire statewide instructional coaches specifically geared towards helping districts shift over to new curriculum. Because, I mean, the reality is that there the majority of the districts in Wisconsin are less than 1,000 kids. They don't have instructional coaches or teachers who have spare time to be doing all of the training and the extra work that's going into having to implement this law. And that's what the instructional coaches provided by the state were supposed to be for. And their districts are not getting any of that right now.
And let's again make clear that $50 million did pass the legislature. The governor signed the bill. And yet the Joint Finance Committee is holding up the funds to try to extract some other concessions from Governor Evers. So they've put out this great big unfunded mandate that will be no doubt talked about as part of the budget bill. Okay, so turning to the budget bill, the process starts with Governor Evers making a budget proposal. He will do that next month. Has he signaled what kinds of education-related matters might be in his budget proposal, or is this still a work in progress?
I think in some ways, I think the bones of it are already there. I've heard a lot of talk that it's going to be a lot of the same stuff that he's done in the past. Special ed is funding is definitely going to be a focus, and there's a lot of question about what percentage he'll be asking for. I'm sure that there will be a request for mental health support funding. I know that I've also heard that there is renewed interest or ability to think that we are going to refund the Office for School Safety that almost lost funding in the last budget, but because of the shooting that happened at Abundant Life, that will have probably funding again through the next biennium as well because of that. But I do think that it's going to be a lot of the same stuff that he asked for in the last budget that we didn't end up getting.
Well, for good reason that he's bringing it back up. For folks who you might have heard this before, but we're going to keep hammering away at this. Special education reimbursement from the state had fallen to 30% and lower in some cases. The legislature bumped it up to about 35%, but this same Republican-controlled legislature for voucher school districts, for private, often religious schools, they reimbursed those schools 90%. For their special education costs. So there's definitely room for improvement, shall we say, that I'm sure we'll hear from the governor. Same goes on the mental health funding, where he proposed a lot more than what the legislature ultimately gave. So assuming Republicans once again will simply dump the governor's budget bill and start from scratch, have we heard anything from the Republican side as far as any education proposals for this session?
Yeah, I have not heard anything beyond the fact that they think that the education community is asking for too much, that there's no way that they're going to fund the things that the education community is asking for, where they're already giving historic amounts of money to the education community. I'll be interested to see. I haven't really heard whether or not they're even talking about doing inflationary increases. I know that the veto for the $325 increase to the revenue cap is still kind of in flux with the legal system. So I don't know how that'll play out in this budget, because I do feel a little bit like the $325 bump to the revenue cap might even be in question if that doesn't make it through the court system as staying in as part of the red line.
Yeah, this was a bump of what, $325 per pupil? Per
yes,
year, right?
Per year, yep.
But through the governor's line item veto, he had that annual bump of that amount going for, what was it, 400 years?
Yeah, something another 400 years. Yeah.
And so I can definitely see room for a compromise there to, you know, close the window, but maybe to adjust the dollar amount. So that's one possibly bipartisan thing that could come out of all of this. But in terms of, you know, where the public goes from here, how do folks have input on these matters? So what are the ways that they can either learn more or advocate for something that they just heard about? What role do they play?
Yeah, so the public is a huge, they hear from you know, advocacy groups all the time. We're hopefully chirping in their ear quite a bit. Wisconsin Public Education Network will have a lot of information as budget hearings go on. I would also say that, speaking as a school board member too, like, your school board should absolutely know what's going on with the state legislature and with the budget, because it's so impactful for them. And if you want to have a direct line beyond speaking to your legislators, which obviously is a really great thing to do, your school board members are also a great line through to people, because as a school board member, you're a fellow elected official. And so talking to the rest of the legislature and the legislators is really great. And then also, I would say, you know, having the public talk to the legislators, they need to hear from us. And I think people are often afraid to do that, but there's no reason to be. That's what the legislators are there for, to represent you. So.
Right. And by the way, reaching out to your school board members is also a good way to find out if, in fact, they are pro public education, which I think a lot of people would assume, but aren't aware that sometimes people who win these school board races are people who are decidedly not there to bolster public education. And so if you reach out to a school board member and the first thing they say is, well, I'm just here to be a good steward of the taxpayer dollar. I mean, that's your red flag right there, that they're going to support cutbacks to public schools in order to benefit private religious voucher schools. Do in fact talk to your school board members, your legislators. There will be things in the education committees of the Assembly and Senate, and of course the Joint Finance Committee. And Bryn Horton follows it all, follows all of it, and we look forward to getting her updates throughout the legislative session, thanks to the good folks at the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Bryn, nice to hear from you again. Thank you so much for all you do, and we'll touch base again real soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
You bet. All right. Have a great day. And when we come back, Todd Alba from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show will be along, and I'm going to ask him about fact-checking and Facebook deciding, you know, that fact-checking, that's too politically biased. Political bias in facts. That's where we are these days. Todd's next. You're up north. I saw you with your smile
so tender. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Just for Todd Alba, we've got Mike Reno there, who turns 70 years old. From Loverboy, singing about the kid being hot tonight.
Todd, I feel like Alba, this should be Todd's new intro music.
It'd work. Sure. Tony writes in, noticing your glass of orange juice there, and writes in on YouTube, mimosa?
Not proper glassware, Tony, and so no, it's only orange juice, nothing else.
Okay, we just wanted to do a little mental health check there. Yep. How are you this morning? And by the way, you could have lied about the orange juice and the mimosa, because Mark Zuckerberg thinks it's okay now that the community will correct you eventually if you're spreading a falsehood. You already see where I'm going with this.
it's true. I saw that.
I haven't talked about it yet, except what I mentioned on with Greg and Jane yesterday morning. But Mark Zuckerberg, you know, basically joining what is now the axis of evil in terms of billionaires, mm-hmm. with Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, and now Mark Zuckerberg, these three billionaires attaching themselves to the president-elect's posterior. And what could go wrong with three billionaires willing to trash their various platforms in order to get more tax breaks and have more power and all that? So for Zuckerberg to say, as he did yesterday, that fact checkers are politically biased, and so we're going to get rid of them, it sounds like the kind of thing a cartoon villain would say, and yet this is real life.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been one to get my news from Facebook, but I know a lot of people do. And I think it's just another example of why people should not do that. And, you know, instead listen to great programs from Courier News Service and Civic Media and others, be diverse in your news gathering. And yeah, I mean, but I mean, I know this is a controversial take in some ways, but I have a lot more spam and a lot more just misinformation on my Facebook feed prior to this than I ever have on my Twitter, now X feed, because I don't do the for you. I just do the following. And so now, you know, I've gone over to Blue Sky, kind of sort of the new app. Yep. But I think maybe more insightful was Mark Cuban, of course, from Shark Tank, and he has this new cost plus drugs company that's really great. And he had a really good take. He's in the IT and tech world. And I thought he had a really good take on it. And he said, because a lot of people were up in arms about, you know, all the people that you mentioned, plus Tim Cook at Apple, and go right down the list, are giving $1 million, $2 million to Trump's inauguration. And Cuban said, this is just transactional. And he said, it's really about the race for all these companies. It's Apple, ChatGPT, and, you know, each one has an AI. And he goes, this AI is the race right now in tech. It's all about AI. And he goes, they're not doing it to get favor from Trump. They just don't want Trump to put his thumb on the scale against them. Yeah. And he said, and he had a really good point. He said, a little bit of this is Biden's fault, because Biden had no interest in tech or getting involved or talking to any of these people. And he said, guess what? Neither does Trump. Neither Trump nor Biden understand tech, but right. Trump understands transactional things. And this is just transactional. They're paying $1 million, $2 million to keep Trump away from them. I thought that was a really good take.
Here to me, though, is the more important point in this. Mark Zuckerberg had to follow up and make clear that he is still going to have fact checkers on Facebook in Europe because the EU requires it. In other words, one of the worst, cuss word here, words that we ever adopted in this country was deregulation. When platforms like Facebook and the rest need more regulation than ever before, because otherwise this toxic pipeline of disinformation, much of it coming from Russia, just brings down the very democracy that is supposed to guarantee free speech for individuals, not for corporations, but for individuals. And Todd, if there's one thing that gets me worked up, it is that Facebook faced no accountability, no real accountability for what they did in 2016 of allowing so much Russian and Chinese spam. And I heard from so many people in 2016 going, well, I saw this on Facebook about Hillary. I'm like, it's not true. But Facebook did nothing to police it, because they're like, we're not a publisher. We're a platform. We don't do anything. We just open up the pipeline. Well, if they can keep fact checkers in Europe, you know what? They can keep fact checkers here, is my view.
They could, sure. They're not going to, but they
no,
could.
They're not. Yeah, if Biden should be faulted for anything, it's yes, not saying no. We're bringing the hammer down on this. You can't make millions or billions off of, you know, being a spreader of lies. We wouldn't let TV networks do that. Why do we let these social media platforms do it? I'll never understand.
I wish that our elected officials on both sides of the aisle would take more interest in that kind of stuff, but yeah. We all know why they don't. The old dollar sign.
Oh yeah, absolutely. it's one of those where we don't have the time today, but it's one of those where I clearly see, you know, you as a former Republican, where you come at this issue, and you clearly see where I'm coming from this issue. And it's one of those, frankly, refreshing conversations where two people can go, well, you know, I don't quite see it that way, but between the two of us, do we find a way that we can have the best of social media platforms without having the worst of social media platforms? And it's not easy, or it would have been done by now, but I don't know why there aren't more Todd Albus and Pat Kreitlow's out there in the legislature to do
Box,
this.
Right?
And Greg Box. Greg Box for Congress.
Really quickly, I think maybe the bigger story, honestly, was the fact, was it yesterday or the day before, that they got rid of net neutrality.
That's right up there with it.
God, that was quiet.
And for people that don't understand, the quick version is, it means it's going to be more expensive and harder for rural Wisconsinites in particular to get internet.
Yeah, especially broadband, because these big companies can throttle down that speed if they want to help their biggest customers. And yeah, it's going to hurt a lot of folks. Todd Alba will have all kinds of good things to chew on from noon to two today. Todd, thank you so much.
Quite included.
Oh, thank you too. Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir. Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. You can look for him there. Thanks to Bryn Horton, Selena Heller, and Melissa Baldoff, and to you for being here this morning. I'm Pat Wrightlow, here from Lake Wasota. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.